The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
You know, I throw a few nice little spirals and rockets at his face, and he's catching them. And damn, you throw the ball pretty good, Sims. You know, I go, I did play quarterback in the NFL. You know that? He's like, what? You played in the NFL? I had no idea.
Yo, what's up? It's Chris Sims. Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Ahmed Farid is here. We're back. We had a sabbatical, a week off. It was awesome. We're both Tanner.
We are.
So that is a good thing. We're healthier. We're revived. And that was, yes, a little story about the great Rob Gronkowski and him not realizing that, one, I played quarterback in the NFL, two, that my dad was Phil Sims. He was not aware of that until many, many days into me knowing him. We got a good show today.
But he'd be a good talent evaluator because he saw your arm strength and was like, dang,
damn,
all right.
That's real. Hey, you can There's say what you want here. Me about his quarterback, but my arm was not. You couldn't argue that. I could throw the damn thing.
He had no preconceived notions of you.
No,
you know,
he
was going off your arm talent alone. It was like, dang, all right.
Damn, this is the best tight end coach I've ever had here throwing me the ball.
Yeah, maybe it was who he was comparing you to that
exactly.
Just stood out to him.
That's there. The problem. That's the problem.
Yeah, you look good.
Thanks,
you got a
man.
Glow about you.
Got a glow. Got a little burn, you know.
Do you have to get the burn the first day to get the glow second,
well,
third day?
I got to push the – well, I got to be careful. Like, it is Anguilla, and you're way down there. That's where we were. We went to Anguilla.
You wouldn't tell us that before you went.
Right, I didn't want, you know, the paparazzi following me down, right? But, no, it's for the funniest thing in my life right now is I'm the white guy in the family, right? My wife's 100% Sicilian.
Okay.
My kids, of course, have their blood, right?
Yeah.
They have a definite darker shade of skin than I do. So I'm like, Mr. Wait, how do I look, guys? I got 50 on, and it's been an hour. Do I need to reapply it again?
Yeah.
And then there's my kids, you know, the Italian stallions. They're out there like 3 hours in a row. They got no sunscreen on yet. And I'm like, wow. And then I just like the second or third day, I kept saying, I'm like, I'm so proud that these are my kids. Look at this.
Yeah.
They're tan. They don't need like sunscreen every 30 minutes like I do. I can't believe this. So I got to chuckle out of
people
that.
People asking them, well, your stepdad over there. Well, how long
yeah,
you known
yeah,
him?
Exactly.
Like, no, he's my actual
exactly.
dad. This doesn't look like it right now.
He's just a few shades lighter or redder than me right now.
It's completely the opposite in my family because my wife has very fair skin.
Right.
So, and my kids have fairer skin than I do.
Yes,
so
right.
It's the complete opposite in our family. So we're lathering them up with all the different. And my son got burned. We were in Florida,
right,
for winter break, and my son got pretty burned.
Right,
he didn't want to admit it though.
Yeah,
I was like, "Do you feel okay?" He's like, "I feel fine. I feel." But it was like, "Ew, that doesn't look good." I felt like a bad parent. Like they could take us to jail.
Oh, I hear
that.
I hear that. Yeah, I know.
But it was great. It was great. But now we're back.
We're back. It never ends, baby.
You're about to get on a plane once again.
Getting on a plane this afternoon, going to Indy, Combine. I mean, to me, this is like the official kickoff week of the 2023 NFL season now. We've officially transitioned away from Super Bowl champs, Chiefs 2022 season. Now we restart the new league year. And to me, this is kind of the kickoff of it. The week at Indy, seeing the coaches, GMs, all the new players that are going to be in our league. It is cool. And I'm always excited to go there. I love seeing some of the guys. I love catching up with some old friends, coaches, front office people. That's the best thing about the NFL Combine.
So you'll get a look at who? Will you get a look at some quarterbacks?
Yeah, they've changed it around a little bit. bit. So the quarterbacks aren't until later in the week. So I don't know if I'm going to get to see them in person or not. I might get to see them, but I don't think we're going to get to interview them or do that. So, yeah, that's the stinky thing about it. We're only going to be doing the show there from 2 days. We're going to do Tuesday, Wednesday. We're going to be there pretty much throughout the day on Pro Football Talk. Thursday, we'll be back here in the studio on as a normal show. But, yeah, the way things are scheduled, I think really, you know, we're going to get a real good taste of some the D linemen, the edge rushers, the D tackles.
The
we're
only
get
important
all them.
Guys
I think
anyway.
Some O linemen are coming along as well.
The
so.
Big butts.
The big only, butts. That, they're the most
that's
fun
all you
to
need
look
to
at.
See.
Right.
So you'll be watching on TV at the end of the week, much like
weekend.
LaFleur for the Packers and much like McVay maybe for the Rams too.
Right.
That's been part of the news, part of the headlines here is that some of the coaches now are saying like, still important, but maybe we don't need to be there to watch it in person.
That's right. You know, I think there's two different, you know, or not ways of thinking, but you know, just because the coaches aren't there doesn't mean the combine isn't still extremely valuable or important to the organization.
Sure.
Right? You know, what happens right now and where it's tough for the coaches and the process of the way the NFL schedule is laid out, think about what they're doing right now. You know, one, the new league year hasn't really officially started, right? Two, the Super Bowl's just over. You're evaluating your own team right now.
Yeah.
You're evaluating your own free agents who are about to be free. Wait, do we want to keep them? What's the money there? Blah, blah, blah. Evaluating the rest of the guys on the roster. Anybody we want to cut? Where do we get them to improve the team, right? Let alone now there's free agents out there that, oh, wait, we'd like to start looking at them to fill in these spots that we think are, you know, necessary in certain areas. And so their hands are full in that. The combine has great value, but not to them that they have to be there in person for it, right? They can lean on their GM, their front office people to, you know, hey, we talked to this guy. It was a little concerning. Hey, we met this guy in person. Oh, man, he's way different than you think, right? And so there's that value. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the value still doesn't matter that they're not there to watch the workout on row 74 from the stadium anyways, right? So now, you know, not only would they be missing out on evaluations of their team and their free agency, but you know, all these things are filmed, and they're going to get to watch it. And as far as the meeting, if they really like the guy, they'll bring him in for a visit into their facility at some point. So the combine is still the most valuable tool to evaluate college football players. And that's where I don't want the conversation to be confused.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
but I get
think
it.
Some people have took it that way. Like, oh, maybe there shouldn't be the combine anymore if the coaches aren't going.
Well, yeah. Well, it's just it's kind of striking because the philosophy and it seems like the mentality in the NFL is that if you don't do it, someone else is going to do it and they're going to have an advantage. And even if it's a 1% advantage that, yeah, you don't want to fall behind. And so if this guy's going to stay up, you know, 23 straight hours, you got to stay up 24 straight hours.
Is,
you know,
that
is the NFL mentality. But if they don't see enough benefit to seeing it with their
own
eyes.
There's not enough hands-on work that can get done in that week. I think a lot of the coaches realize McVay's, Shanahan, who didn't go last year, they went, wait, I had this plan of all this work I wanted to do during the day when some of the combine activities weren't going on. But an agent called me, or I had to go meet somebody else, or, you know, somebody in my staff. So then they're going, damn, I didn't get done what I wanted to get done today. And then they get home, and then they're like, oh, shit, we only got a little bit of time here before free, and they're behind the eight ball in that. So that's where it is. But even with those, you know, guys who are not there, you're, you know.
Scouts will be there. GMs will be there.
And there's still so many things. First of all, to have everybody in the same place for the medical evaluation, that's the best thing about it.
Yeah.
And then again, the drills are still, it's not foolproof, but there's still great things you can take away from every exercise. And, you know, there's certain things that translate to the field as far as football or things that they're not good in one of these drills that translate and you go, oh, that's a concern for me. Right? So there's plenty of that.
Oh, 100%.
And that's where the value of the combine really shows.
Yeah, I think the argument that this shows that the combine is not as important, I think that's false. It's just like, do these coaches need to be there? And when you think about it, it really does make sense because it's not like it would almost be more beneficial for these coaches if there was a free agency camp. Because then you really do have the chance to take any of those guys. The draft, you end up doing so much work on guys who just aren't available when your spot comes up to pick. Just think about that. It's not, it's like we like 20 guys. Oh, they were picked before we had a chance to take them. So you probably do end up doing so much work that you're just like, what was all that
for? Well, and they have so much time before that.
It's like Cole Strange? Why did we look at Cole Strange?
Right. It's the end of April before that. You know, so you know how coaches are. They're process right now. the thing that's, you know, on the on-deck circle is free agency. So that's what they're worried about. And they got to worry about that first, and then they try to fill in from the, you know, the rest of the roster and needs throughout the draft. But that's another conversation for another day, whether they should have free agency, you know, after the draft. Or,
we've talked about that
before. Yeah, we have talked about it before. But we got a good one today here on the pod.
We do, because it's going to be our all-pro team. Actually, your all-pro team.
Whoa.
For the first time in the history of the world, you had a vote.
I did.
Someone gave you
a I was finally heard.
So you voted for first team, second team All-Pro, right?
Yes.
Offense, defense, special teams.
Yes.
With help of Pete.
Oh, special teams, I leaned on Pete for sure.
Good.
I leaned
As you
on
should.
Him. Yes, I did.
So Pete, we have that.
That was the one area I leaned on, you know, anybody to do this thing, was Pete with my special teams. He definitely laid out some stats and some things for me on some of the punt returners and gunners.
Oh, yeah.
To where then I could, you know, make the decision off that, but he certainly helped me in a big way there, Peter, Peter, Peter.
And so we'll also have the under-talked-about awards, my under-talked-about players.
Yes.
So that started last year when you were talking about Jaire Alexander. And you go, he is one of the most, you know, under-talked-about guys in the NFL. He should be talked about more. So we're like, that's perfect. So we have our under-talked-about guys, guys who should have been talked about more. Of course, we'll give out the Big Butt of the Year awards. I mean, huge
Got
there.
To.
Peter, Peter, Peter awards.
Yes.
We'll give out those as well, even though they may be similar to what we hear in the All Sims, because Peter had a big influence there. And also the third annual Homies Choice Awards.
That's most important.
You guys voted through Chris's Twitter. Pete put it together through a form of some of the greatest moments, some of the top performers. And the difference there in the Homies Choice Awards is that we do include the playoffs. And so what they did in the postseason, which is
Kind of a big deal, right?
Are included in those awards. So should we get to it?
Let's do it.
Let's get right to it.
You know
the Sims All-Pro team for 2022. You want to start on offense here?
Yeah, might as well.
And let's start at the most important position on offense. A quarterback. I could have probably guessed who your All-Pro first and second team guys were before I saw them here. Go for it.
Yeah,
Did we do a big reveal
here? Yeah, I mean, I guess we could just talk about it. You know, we know. Yes, I went with Patrick Mahomes as my first team quarterback. I went with Josh Allen as my second team quarterback. I understand that, you know, there's certainly some debate over the second team one there, right? I mean, hey, Joe Burrow, Jalen Hurts, obviously the guy who won second team All-Pro quarterback. I get all of that. But, you know, again, for me, And Josh Allen, you talk about value of the value to a team and what they do. I think that's something we tried to emphasize to people all year long. I think people realized that as the year went on, they started to go, wait, he's really the only thing they got that's real special on that offense. We know Diggs is in that combo a little bit. But as out of the superstar quarterbacks in the league right now, I think Josh Allen has got the least amount of talent around him. And I think he dictates the way they play as a football team just through his talent. So that's where I gave him the edge as my second team quarterback. But I don't think the first team quarterback's a surprise by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, you went into the year with Josh Allen as your number one quarterback in the Chris Sims.
He won't be this year.
Top 40 quarterback list.
I mean, it just inklings into that. I mean, Mahomes is going to be one going into the next year. I mean, we always knew Mahomes. We said this many times. In totality, Mahomes, yes, his career is better than anybody in the league right now. You know, the last two seasons, as far as not this past one, 2022, but 2020 and 2021, I don't think it was crazy to say Josh Allen had better years than Patrick Mahomes in those two seasons, right? So, hey, this year, Mahomes is one. What will come down to me, which is going to be interesting this year, is Josh Allen two.
Yeah.
You know, because Burrow, to me, will be in that conversation this year. Burrow. And that's where, you know, film and getting into some of my nuanced stuff and watching stuff that way when it comes time to do the quarterback rankings, we'll see. But I do think that should be an interesting part of it.
And your guy Justin Herbert was number two in passing yards this year, too. So he'll be in the conversation up there in the top four once
definitely,
again.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I think we all know who the top four are. Right. It's just the order. We know who the top four are.
It's just where's Tom Brady going to be? That's the only question at this point.
Somewhere disappointing to the New England fans.
Yeah. It's like, I know he's not playing anymore, but still, you got to have Tom Brady in your top 20.
Right, right. Oh, I got a lot of flack, you know, from those my three favorite idiots over at WEI. You know, worst take of the year, Justin Herbert better than Tom Brady. Are they kidding me?
Like, get out of here.
Didn't you get some flack in this building for your Joe Burrow is going to be better than Tom Brady
Oh, yeah, I have. Yes, I have. Yes, we've addressed that many a times. I don't think we need to
What do you mean you've addressed that? Like in person, like in a parking lot or something?
No, not that serious. So that's quarterback, but I don't think it's anything shocking there.
Not
at least
shocking.
If you know me.
Running back, the guy that you give it to, would have been shocking in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, right. But it's, I mean, I think clearly the best running back in the game last year was Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is just, you know, he's got it all. And Josh Jacobs is one of those guys, man, if you saw him in person, and my second team running back, Nick Chubb, same way here, you'd go, oh, that's what makes him a top. If you Josh Jacobs in person is a, I know his measurables don't look like it. He's a much bigger, thicker human being than you realize. I bet you he weighs significantly more than what he's listed at, you know, and he's just naturally thick with those, you know, thick neck and big square head, and same kind of with Nick Chubb that way. But to me, those are the two best in the game right now. They're just between the tackles, making people miss. Chubb's better at the 50 or 60 yard touchdown run, but man, Josh Jacobs, the amount of awesome 15 and 12 and 10 yard runs, it's off the charts good.
Couple names you could have thrown in there, maybe Derrick Henry, second in the NFL in rushing yards this year.
Yeah.
Did seem to take a step back for whatever reason. I mean, that team wasn't as good either.
Quarterback got hurt, no A.J. Brown. There was nothing to worry about other than just stopping Derrick Henry. That's all teams worried about there for a little while, and I think that certainly helped him. But still, I mean, hey, Derrick Henry, I don't give a shit if he doesn't make another Pro Bowl, All-Pro team, whatever. Derrick Henry, for my money, is already an all-time great running back. And I think he's, to me, probably getting on the fringe of first ballot Hall of Famer type of guy, too, for his career.
And you go Nick Chubb over your guy Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, Saquon was certainly, like, you know, I thought about him. I do. But, man, Nick Chubb, to me, as we did our running back rankings before the year, he just got it all. He really does. There's no aspect of his game that I look at to go, ooh, you know, I wish he was a little bit better there.
He's still pretty underrated, I feel like.
I would agree with that, too. You know, share some carries. And their team doesn't get enough, you know, national spotlight games because they haven't been good enough to be in playoffs and things like that. So would agree with you there.
Everybody's got some other drama going on that's not Nick Chubb, which is good if you're Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
Not good if you want to stand out amongst all the other players out there in the NFL. All right, wide receiver, you had three choices here for first team wide receiver. This was tough because, as you said a couple years ago, there are 20 top three wide receivers, top 10.
This might have been the toughest one altogether, and the talent there. Listen, for me, the top three receivers in football this year were Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, and A.J. Brown. Nobody was more of a game changer for their football team. You know, again, I'd be the guy that would sit there and tell you the MVP of the Eagles was A.J. Brown. Nobody changed their team more than he did. And A.J. Brown, to me, this year solidified himself as one of the two or three best. I don't know what can you look at about A.J. Brown? Every time he catches the ball, it's a 60-yard bomb or a touchdown. I mean, what else? Is that not dangerous or is that not awesome? You know, I know some of the other guys on the right. I got Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs and Jalen Waddle. I like all of them. But again, Devontae Adams, big plays, you know, they don't come the same way A.J. Brown does, in my opinion. Neither was Stephon Diggs. A lot of first downs, a lot of 15, 20-yard plays. But those guys on the left, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, and A.J. Brown, those are like slant, touchdown, go route, touchdown, post route, touchdown, screen, touchdown. You know, they're unbelievable weapons at this point of their career.
I like Jalen Waddle, too, second team. I think it was, what was it? It was in the Pro Bowl that Jamar Chase made it over Jalen Waddle.
Yeah, the name thing. Jamar Chase, again, in totality, is a top five receiver in football.
Yeah.
This year himself, did he have a better year? Yeah, he missed some games, right, exactly right. You know, missed some games, played a number of games where he wasn't even 100% either. So I don't think you get to see the real guy for a good part of the year. Jalen Waddle, you know, again, I know CeeDee Lamb made second team, right, where I don't have him. I just put more value, and anybody who's listened to us knows this, in those type of guys. I put more value in the guy that, you know, oh, wait, you can throw him a slant round and he can run by everybody for 70 yards? Okay, yeah, CeeDee Lamb, he's got a lot of great stuff. He's an awesome player. I have tremendous respect for him. A lot of awesome 12 and 15-yard catches, and he's tough and everything.
But I'm one that, you know, the explosive ability. You're talking about one guy had 75 catches, Jalen Waddle. CeeDee Lamb had 107. And Jalen Waddle had three less yards on the year. After, what is that, 32 less catches, right? He had one less touchdown. 6 yards more per reception. I'm just bigger into that. You know I am. His explosive ability is special, in my opinion.
And it's like a resurgence of the skinny receiver out there. We really are seeing a lot.
Guy,
the
right?
smaller guy.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, college teammates at Alabama. Both skinnier guys. Chris Olave had a big year.
Right.
Smaller dude.
Sure. Garrett Wilson, skinny like that. Yeah. No doubt. I think it's...
I hope they hold up.
It's going to be the big thing. I mean, yeah, you know, Devontae Smith, you're sitting here today. He was in a walking boot, you know, last week from all due accounts. Yeah, you hope they hold up too. Jalen Waddle did get beat up this year. We've seen Devontae Smith get beat up. I do think with the current rules of the way the NFL are, yeah, those guys can last more now than maybe they could in the 90s or 80s when the rules were a little different.
You have Travis Kelce, first team.
Shocker.
Going to be no argument there. But second team, George Kittle.
Yeah.
So obviously he's been in that conversation for a long time, second, first team. More yards this year, though. T.J. Hockenson had more yards than Kittle. It looks like Evan Ingram did, too, along with Mark Andrews.
Yeah.
Why Kittle over those guys?
Well, Kittle, to me, one, is a better run blocker than all those guys. Kittle's a pretty special run blocker. You know, Kittle also... You know, had a little bit of an unstable quarterback situation,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
You know, so that led to, I think, some maybe underwhelming games in the early part of the year, early middle part of the year. But then he exploded once Brock Purdy got comfortable. You know, you saw what he was capable of. And to me, you know, him and Kittle are the... Yeah, they're the best in the game with the ball in their hand. I mean, him and Kelce. And Kittle, like, has a, you know, Kelce might be better at, you know, wiggling and getting away and getting an extra 15, 10 yards. But Kittle has, like, got legit, you know, a little bit more of an explosive ability to where you're like, oh, whoa, he's gone for 60 down the sideline, right? He might not be quite as good overall in the pass game as Kelce, but damn, he's special. And it's less, you know, it's hard to... You know, 11 touchdowns. I mean, the plays he makes are game-changing, different, you know, different type of plays, and that's where I give him the edge.
Yeah, I think from second half of the year on, you know, midpoint of the year on, I think George Kittle by far stands out.
Right.
Know, pretty close to Travis Kelce in that regard, too.
It was, and pretty close. And, man, that tight end position we're seeing, is it's becoming freakier and freakier.
I think there are a lot of good tight ends in the draft coming up this year.
From what I've heard, I think you're right. And then, like, I mean, you talk about, you know, the names you just mentioned. I mean, Evan Ingram's a superstar.
Right.
Dallas Goedert is damn good, you know. Darren Waller, I mean, he was hurt all year. I mean, Darren Waller, you talk to anybody in football, he's probably the most talented tight end there is in the game. So it's a special position in the league right now.
All right, we move to the guys protecting all those skilled players.
Big
making
guys.
Them look good. You got to have time if you're a guy like Joe Burrow out there. So the big guys up front. The offensive line, I think we can take a look at your first and second team offensive line. Some names that are no surprises. You have Lane Johnson and Trent Williams, your two tackles. That was probably pretty easy for
you. They were easy, no doubt. I think they're the two best tackles in the game, left tackle, right tackle, whatever you want to say. I think you can almost just say that. I mean, if Lane Johnson got moved over to left tackle, you'd go, oh, damn, who's better, him or Trent Williams? Or if you move Trent to right, you go, oh, damn, who's better, him or Lane? Thank God they don't play on the same side. Those were easy. The middle three, I think, you know, those are some conversations to be had, and I think there was some differences there with me and the rest of the world.
So the AP had Jason Kelce as first-team center, Creed Humphrey as second team. You do have Creed Humphrey as second team, but you have my guy Frank Ragnow, Detroit Lions, first team.
I'm a little bit of a sucker for an absolute killer in the run game, and that's what Frank Ragnow is. You know, Kelce was a hard one here. Kelce athletically is better than those two guys, and there's things that he does on the edge and getting to the second level type of blocks like that that I go, yes, no doubt about it. But if you asked me, like, who would be better, like, we want to run behind this guy and he's got to blow the nose tackle off the ball and we got to get 3 yards right here, I'm going to pick the other two guys to root out a big Chris Jones or Christian Wilkins type of player, right? I think that's where, you know, they got a little bit of an advantage. Again, Jason Kelce, I'm not mad that
he's on there. I guess I'm a little surprised he was first team. But I just look at Frank Ragnow as being in the prime of his career and the best center in the game right now.
Left guard, you had Joel Bitonio for the Cleveland Browns,
right.
Joe Tooney for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So you got a couple Chiefs on the second team, offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, Tooney and Creed Humphrey are really good. And Tooney, to me, and again, one of the reasons I think I picked the Chiefs is – you know, hey, Orlando Brown, hey, Creed Humphrey we're talking about. Joe Tooney is arguably the best pass-blocking guard in football. And that's where I see his value.
Eyebrows could be raised at right guard.
Right.
Because the AP had Zach Martin from the Dallas Cowboys as first team, and then Chris Lidstrom as second team. You have the Falcons' Chris Lidstrom as first team.
Yeah.
And then you have Michael Owenu from the Patriots as second team.
Yeah.
So you have left off Zach Martin.
Zach Martin's still really good. I think he gets a little overhyped because of prior accomplishments. Like, what I want to tell people is, like, let's watch film together, and I'm show you Chris Lidstrom, Zach Martin, like, 4 years ago right now, in the prime. To me, like, the best road grading guard there is in the game right now. I mean, just dominates people. So I just don't think the public knows about him quite enough yet to make him first team. Next year, I think he'll be first team.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Owenu.
Owenu?
Owenu. It's the same. I'm a little sucker for these guys that are just killers. And that's where, you know, yeah, he's got position versatility, but he's a great guard, and he's unbelievable in the run game. And, of course, good in pass protection, too. And he was one of those guys that, you know, I look at it here, and not that I try to be different, but I just go, damn, does nobody talk about this guy? I don't know. Every game I watch, they'd say, hey, we know the Patriots are going to run off the right guard, and nobody stops it, and they just run right up the middle. And it's, hey, we don't even have a good offensive coordinator or a passing game this year, but we can still run up the middle with Damian Harris and Ramondre Stevenson. And that's because of this guy. I think he's a hell of a player.
Pete notes here that Quentin Nelson made the Pro Bowl over Owenu.
Yeah, there's no way that should have happened. No way. See, that's the name thing again.
So Pete was talking about this with us before we started the podcast here today, and that has been the case a long time. Once you've established yourself as a name on the offensive line,
hard.
In years past, it's hard. It's like, all right, you've established that you are the guy.
Right.
But I feel like we've come a long way.
People are getting
then.
Better. People
We're getting better at that.
Yeah. We used to see guys that you would hang around the All-Pro team, and you're like, are you fucking kidding me? They still think this guy's an All-Pro?
Yeah.
He should barely be starting for his own fucking team, let alone All-Pro? And yes, I think there was a little – hey, the thing that – about that's where the PFFs of the world are good. They've expanded people's knowledge. Now, sometimes it's a little too much like this is the holy grail, and I don't always agree with that, right? And then the availability to film – through PFF and other avenues, I do think has helped people out to go, wait, I can just watch 50 plays of these guys right now and just watch this guy. And that, and so I do think it's improved in that area for sure.
So that's the offense, the Chris Sims team. But and I'd like to say, too, and so you said that I like the guys that just crush it in the run game. And that's the whole point of having a vote and having multiple points of view. And people think that all the time, like in baseball. I'm a big baseball guy.
Yeah,
and it's
right.
Like, I think a lot of people think with these awards, it's like there's a right answer and a wrong answer. It's a quiz, not a ballot.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, no, you're supposed to bring your own opinions, your own biases, your own feelings to your vote. And that's you like the guys that crush it in the run game. I mean, I feel like that's perfectly fine. If anyone's trying to pick a fight out there.
No, yeah. And to me, too, you know, again, it's you know, maybe my eyes a little different through being a player and things like that.
But that's how it's supposed to
be. Maybe where I can appreciate some nuances of their game that, you know, maybe a Peter King, as great as he is, won't appreciate, right?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And not to say I'm right or he's right or I'm wrong or he's wrong. I'm not trying to say that. But, you know, that's where, you know, hey, right tackle. Tristan Wirfs is awesome. I thought about him at right tackle, right, and second team, but I put Brian O'Neill there. You know, I went, wait, Wirfs missed four games. He played a few games that he wasn't even 100%. It wasn't his best ball. You know, I know in totality, he's probably a first-team type of guy, but I did not think it was a second-team all-pro type of year with missing four games and then playing a few others out of 100%.
Yeah.
O'Neill is a reason, you know, you see Kirk Cousins sitting back there all day long, waiting for Justin Jefferson 20 yards down the field all fucking day, every day. Right? He's, to me, another one of those guys where I go, nobody knows about this guy enough. And maybe that's where I'm a little biased sometimes. And I do give, you know, if it's a tie, I give the unknown guy the tie goes to the runner that way. Yeah.
I mean, it is probably the case that he is being overlooked, too. And so you're probably not wrong with that instinct. And I'm glad you gave some love to Brian O'Neill, because I almost put him on the under-talked about team. He just missed the cut even there. Can you believe that? But we give some love and Chris does
that's
the second team. That's the O.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So we'll start on the defensive line, the edge guys, the defensive tackles
here.
The big butt guys. And here are the names that we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of guys off the radar. We've been talking about these guys all year long because of what we do with the Big Butt Awards. But your first team defensive linemen, Chris Jones, Dexter Lawrence. I mean, I don't want to give away what I'm doing with the Big Butt Awards,
but
those guys
are
going to
be on there.
Those guys had dominant years.
Yeah, they're dominant. You know, they are. Chris Jones was the best D tackle in football this year. Dexter Lawrence, for me, was a little bit of that guy that I don't know if people really realized how awesome he was all year. Didn't necessarily have sack numbers that put it up that way. But his ability, just like game-changing plays like the last play against the Vikings, right? No stat. But he was about to crush Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins had to throw the ball before he wanted to, and he had to throw it short of the chains, right?
Yep.
Had to throw a little 4-yard out instead of trying to get a pass in on the 4th and 8.
He dominated that
game. He had a lot of games of domination, and the stats won't always say that. I think he's up there for not only one of the best interior pass rushers and pushing the pocket, but, of course, one of the best run-stopping D-tackles in football. I couldn't overlook his year. I thought it was a special first team all-pro type of year.
So you thought that the AP and totality ended up putting him second team and the Jets Quinnen Williams first team.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not. I mean, Quinnen, see, again, this is to me where Quinnen has more of the stats or the splash plays, right? So that's where I look at it and go, hey, Quinnen's awesome. I get that. But, you know, I think between his sacks and then Dexter not getting enough credit for fucking the play up, or, hey, he's got three guys triple teaming him, and he's just like, oh, I'm standing here so everybody else can make the tackle, and there's still no hole, right? He doesn't get the credit for that type of stuff. But Quinnen Williams, I'm not mad at that, certainly not. He's my second team guy. He was awesome this year. He really was. The guy I was shocked at was Jeffrey Simmons winning second team, where I put Christian Wilkins. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons is the man, too. I mean, we're talking about studs. But this, to me, was not one of his best years. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't watch a Dolphins game without going, who the fuck is that guy running around the field with that big ass making all these tackles, right? Or listening to the announcers go, man, when you watch Christian Will, I mean, so that to me, I had to give him the love. He was second teamer for me.
Yeah. Pete wants to know if that was a Chris Collinsworth impression.
It did have a little bit of
here's a guy, and
I think I
texted you too. I was like, hey, let's give some love to Christian Wilkins, and you're like, I already did that.
Yeah,
because I think he did miss a little bit of time.
Little time, right? It wasn't much.
Not much.
I want to say maybe one or two games, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing that. But to me, again, it's the versatility of what Christian Wilkins is, what he's asked to do, too. See, Quinnen Williams, it's just one gap. Yeah. Win that gap. Christian Wilkins, they go.
Oh, he did play every game?
They go. It was every game?
Okay.
So he went, win that gap. And then they also ask him the two gap, right? That's like with Dexter Lawrence. So they ask him to win with like the speed shooting the gap thing, but then also hold people up and just control the giant human on Earth. No problem. And to me, you know, I give that some value. And, yeah, they're going to have to pay him some big money here soon.
Your edge guys, you went with Nick Bosa and Micah Parsons first team. You didn't have Micah Parsons at linebacker, so that was good.
That was one of the funny things because I was a little late turning in my ballot, and I was, like, feeling so bad. It's my first year, right? So I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry I turned in the ballot. It was a day I was going to see Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. It was due.
A lot going on.
I was a little stressed that day. And then I was like, oh, I'll do it and finalize it when I'm on the plane. And then they had no Wi-Fi in the plane. I was like, oh, my gosh, this guy's going to kill me. So well, that night when I finally said, I'm really, really sorry, I was like, damn, what a great first impression I made. And he's like, don't worry. I'm still chasing half the voters to tell them that Micah Parsons is not a stand-up linebacker anymore. So that made me feel better.
I've seen him play that once or twice. So you had Bosa and Parsons as your first team guys. You had Myles Garrett and Max Crosby second team.
Yeah. The one where – you know, first off, I think Nick Bosa and Mike Parsons for me were clearly the guys. Clearly. Myles Garrett, to me, was clear. You know, the one I did go back and forth was Max Crosby and Hassan Reddick. It is. I mean, Reddick is phenomenal.
He did get Reddick second team.
Yeah, I know.
Over Crosby.
I know. And you know, I guess where I feel a little, or maybe the thing that I feel like Max was all year long, where Hassan might have been more came on strong at the end of the season type of thing. And then, I the other part of Max that I don't think gets talked about, because we just talk about the sacks and all that. I would argue that Max Crosby plays harder, like him and Christian Wilkins, the guy we just talked about, they might play harder than anybody in football on a down-to-down basis. They like never come off the field, and it's pedal to the metal every play, whether it's like, whoa, they just chased the guy 30 yards downfield, and then it's still pedal to the metal in the pass rush the next play. So that's kind of where I gave him a little bit of an edge over that one. But that was one that kept me up a little bit, where I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong with this one. But Max is a hell of a player. Hassan is too. They're both worthy of it.
Yeah, some of these are so difficult.
Oh, it's like
there's five or six players that had really, really good years, and
yeah,
they're pretty equal. Let's go to the linebackers now and the defensive backs. You get a few more selections here. Three linebackers that make first team. You got a couple corners and then a couple of safeties. Let's start with the linebackers.
Yeah.
And I think there was a little bit of, I mean, you had a little bit of a flavor here than what actually happened with the first and second team. You had Fred Warner from the 49ers as first team, C.J. Mosley as well, and then Roquan Smith for the Baltimore Ravens all first team.
Yeah. Fred Warner to me is the best linebacker in football. There's nobody better than Fred Warner. C.J. Mosley, similar position, same exact defense, really, for the most part. And we talked about him a lot throughout the year. Mosley, Fred Warner, there's just no weakness to their game. And Mosley, it was shocking just because you were like, wait, injuries, getting up there a little bit in age, is he going to be the same guy, all that. He was everywhere this year, right? Roquan, I think, speaks for itself. He's in that conversation for one of the best linebackers in football. It's probably my second team guys that are a little bit surprising to people out here.
So, yeah, we got Foye Oluokun for the Jacksonville Jaguars is your second team. Dre Greenlaw for the 49ers, second team. Nick Bolton, Chiefs, second team. None of those guys even made the Pro Bowl, let alone the All-Pro team.
Right.
Now, we saw Bolton in the Super Bowl, so validation to you. I'm surprised, though, that Greenlaw hasn't gotten more love, and we'll get to Foye, because I think 2 years in a row, he's basically headlining my defense for my under-talked-about team. He led the NFL in tackles, once again, 2 years in a row.
Yeah. I'm maybe a little bit of a sucker for those guys. Now, he's not the best pass coverage linebacker, right? So that's always the thing you hear about him. But damn, I mean, if they didn't have him a middle linebacker this year, who knows what that run defense would be. You know, so, yeah, he's not perfect,
But he's arguably the greatest tackling machine in the game right now. And you know me. I don't just go with tackles. Like, linebackers, they all get a lot of tackles. So, you know, there's a difference between the tackles. And Aluakon, a lot of tackles are made in the hole or at the one-yard mark, right?
Because you know the difference between – that was set up for an easy tackle. The defensive line basically mauled the entire offensive line, and there's no one blocking the linebacker. You see him as making a lot of very difficult tackles.
I see him making tackles of like, whoa, he took on the fullback and got off him and made the tackle for a one-yard gain. Whoa, he took on the pulling guard and just fucking stalemated him and clogged the hole, and they couldn't get through the hole. He didn't get the tackle, but it was all because of him, right? Sideline to sideline, he's really good. Yeah, he's not the best in pass coverage. So tight ends like that, that's not his. But, yeah, all that. He's, to me, DeMario Davis. That's what we're looking at. It was the same thing said about DeMario for a while. Oh, he's not the best in pass coverage. He's not the best. It's not the worst by any stretch of the imagination. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan of his. And then Dre Greenlaw, to me, is arguably the most underrated linebacker in the sport. He's in that 49er team that's just got stars galore, and he kind of just gets lost in the shuffle. If he was a middle linebacker for another team, everybody would be going, oh, he's one of the best linebackers in football. He gets overshadowed because Fred Warner's on his team, who's a little bit better than he is. But I want to go, man, he put him on like 90% of the other teams in the NFL, and they're going to go, well, he's the best linebacker in our team or our division. I think he's amazing. And then Nick Bolden, to me, I think a little bit like I'm just saying with Dre, he gets a little lost in the shuffle of the other stars on the Kansas City Chiefs, right? And, you know, their defense, it's not always a top five, top six defense. So, you know, everybody always looks at that's got to be the best middle linebacker because that's the top defense, right? And no, not necessarily. I mean, again, no weaknesses, as you saw in the Super Bowl. Can do everything and is awesome in the run, in the pass game. I'm a big fan of Nick Bolden.
So on the second team for the AP, it looks like they had Mosley on the second team, Bobby Wagner, who's not in.
Yeah, which I don't agree with it at all.
For you.
Right. Bobby Wagner is not a second-team all-pro linebacker. I would push it. He's still very good. The Rams told you he wasn't a second-team all-pro linebacker this weekend. They're going to part ways. An all-pro linebacker who's making what? Almost half the other top linebackers in football, it's a bargain. If he was an all-pro linebacker, they'd go, we definitely want him, right? He's not that. He's still very good. He's a guy that I think we look at and go, his name, who he is, the number next to his name as far as tackles is putting him, to me, a little higher. The guy that and Matt Milano, I also love him.
He's first team for the AP.
I know. I do. I don't know. I just don't put him quite in the class of these other guys. I have tremendous respect for his game. And I've been one that's been touting him and Edmonds up there for a while. I just didn't put him in that category. The other guy that I did think about with the second team was DeMario Davis. DeMario Davis, again, he's old school to me like that. And maybe I'm a little bit more old school in nature that way. I am into, plug the hole, stop the run. And he still can cover. I mean, it's amazing what he's doing. Him and Bobby Wagner, what they're doing at their age is unreal.
So Pete has a good question here. He goes, given how much they play nickel defense now, should the all-pro team have five DBs instead of three stand-up linebackers?
It's probably, to be realistic, probably should. Yeah. I mean, there's like, I think if you just took a random team and said, how many games this year did you start the game in base personnel, right, where it was four linemen, three linebackers? I bet you they're going to tell you, when we played the Titans, right? Oh, when we played the 49ers, right? It's going to be like three games a year where they're going to go, we played like the best running team in football, so we started base defense that game because they put on the field two tight ends and, two receivers and a tailback to start, so that's how we gonna start, right? But I think it's definitely a real thing or a good topic of conversation.
You know the guy. You can just call him up. Just be like,
change the whole process, right? For me, I've only been doing it for a year.
Year two, I've experienced now, and I put Micah Parsons at the right spot.
Well, the thing that I think we're talking about more importantly is arguably, I think maybe the most, like one of the most important positions in football right now is not being represented on the All-Pro team.
Corner.
That nickel corner.
Nickel
right?
corner, yes.
Right? That guy that we talk about, whether it's, you know, Mike Hilton for the Bengals or, you know, Jimmy Ward for the 49ers, who we talked about. It was a key to the stopping the Eagles, right? He's going to have to cover the receiver and stop the running game, right? You know, those type of guys, yeah. It's too valuable right now to be left off the team, and I think there's some guys that are worthy of being first-teamers.
And you think it's a different specialized position and not just your third-best cornerback
for
a lot of teams?
It's not, no. And even, like, in the draft, I've had to stop evaluating that way and start going, wait a minute, nickel's a real thing. I can't just go, if he can't play outside, they move him inside. Now you just go, no. Hey, Marcus Jones from, you know, New England, right? Yeah. Last year, I made him a top five corner because I was like, this guy's going to be the fucking best nickel corner in football in 2 years. So I'm going to put him in my top five, even though, yeah, he can't match up outside with, A.J. Brown. That's not his cup of tea.
Yeah.
But inside, he's going to be amazing. That's a real position. I do think it needs to be reevaluated.
All right, so it's difficult here with the defensive backs and the safeties, certainly with the corners, because there's only four.
Yeah.
Two first team, two second team.
Mm-hmm.
You went with Sauce Gardner for the Jets, first team. You went with Patrick Surtain, first team. And then you went with your guy, Tyson Campbell, Jacksonville Jaguars, second team, with Jair Alexander, last year's under-talked-about corner, second team.
Right.
Well.
I don't think, like, really, three out of my four are not shocking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people know, like, yeah, Jair, I feel like people started to realize how good he was at the end of the year. Tyson Campbell is, yeah, he's a little bit of one of my Sim superstars. You know, again, when it gets into the secondary, I'm not so much into the PFF grade as much as everybody else or the other grades out there. You know, again, this corner got to play cover three and just drop into a third all year long with a great pass rush. Well, his grade is 99.7. Well, yeah, he didn't have to do shit except backpedal and not let the guy run by him the whole year. That's what we're going to make him. We're going to make him all pro because of that? And then here's another guy that his grade is 82, but he had to lock down the number one receiver on the team and follow him around all the field. Right? He didn't just get to drop into the cover three zone all game long and have the best pass rush. And we go, well, his grade's not as good. I mean, did you see that play last week? And I go, well, yeah. Did you see who he's covering? That's arguably the fucking freakiest guy on the planet. And they're just saying, cover him like it's nothing. And, you know, we're going to downgrade it. So secondary, I'm a little different. Tyson Campbell's that guy. Tyson Campbell is the guy that they go, cover him. Oh, he got burnt? Well, yeah, he's got burnt. He's covering the number one receiver. He's not burnt. The quarterback just threw a perfect throw, and like he was all over it. I think he's phenomenal. So that's where, you know, my safety and corner is going to be a little different because of that.
Yeah, Minkah Fitzpatrick and Kyle
Duggar, right?
First team guys.
Yeah, and I don't even know what Kyle Duggar's rating was. I mean, maybe Pete can tell us how he was looked at from the scouting community. You know, but I just look at what he did for New England, what he was asked to do, and how much he impressed me on a weekly basis. Can cover tight ends, can cover big receivers. He's awesome in the run game. He's a great blitzer. I look at him and go, he's one of the best safeties in football. And
eighth out of 68th on PFF.
Okay. Oh, that makes – all right. I guess that makes me feel better.
He would have been on their fourth team.
Yeah, right. But that – all right. Then my second team with Buda Baker and Javon Holland. You know, Buda Baker's another guy where it's just a ton on his plate, and he makes that defense go. And I think he's, you know, arguably one of the best tackling safeties in football. It is kamikaze that way. And then Javon Holland goes into our other category. I guarantee his ranking is not good. But, like, Javon Holland... Dolphins, what do we talk about their defense all year? Blitz, blitz, everybody blitzing.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, Javon Holland, you're a safety. We got to cover this awesome slot receiver. Nobody's going to help you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bad grade right there. Well, okay, most defenses in football wouldn't even call that because they would go, our safety can't handle that, so we can't even call it. So he gets downgraded for actually having a better skill set, right? And that's where I do think the narrative needs to get corrected a little bit there.
He was 33rd on PFF's list.
Right. And I would just go, damn, he's in the Chris Sims top five safety ranking right now. I mean, and when I watch him, I just go, holy shit, what an unbelievable open field tackle. Holy crap, where did he come from? Wow, what a nice play on the ball. Oh, he got burned because he, you know, is covering Jamar Chase with no help here. Okay, well, damn. All right, yeah, all right. He let up a 20-yard completion. Okay, he was there. But, I mean, what I don't understand is, like, did people not watch Hufanga the last 6-7 weeks of the year? He got first team just because he was, like, the unknown guy, and early in the year he made some highlight plays? I mean, I just...
He struggled?
Big time! I would argue nobody let up more big plays than the last 6-7 weeks of the year than Hufanga. You know me, I watch the Niners like it's, like, my religion. I don't ever miss a snap in the Niners. So I did not get that one. Derwin James and Justin Simmons are awesome.
They made second team for the AP.
Yeah, they're really awesome. I didn't put them in the category of the other two this year for what they did.
And Jordan Poyer, he did make the Pro Bowl over Duggar and Holland.
Yeah. See, that's a names thing. And it's crazy is what it is. It's crazy.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
So that's your team, right? Do you get to do it again next year?
I think so. They didn't fire me. Not that I've been told yet.
How many people vote for that? Do you have any idea?
I think it's 50.
50. All right. He says 50. You say 50. Okay. So, all right.
Yep.
So it is, though. I mean, 50 in the whole football community.
It's a great honor. I was like, it's very cool to do. And I appreciate being a part of it. I do. And I do think it's, you know, a little bit of like, hey, yeah, this guy's been around here for a while and he does a pretty good job and follows the league. And, you know, I'll give myself a pat on the back to go, hey, okay, things are going in the right direction if people value me a little bit.
You know me. I'm the number one Chris Sims stan. So
there was
no one that looks at more film and studies more players than you as an analyst. I would put you up against anyone. So I think there is no one more qualified to do that job. And hopefully you do it for years to come. I don't know what's more high status, though. Getting on the Chris Sims All-Pro team or being on the Ahmed's under-talked-about
team. Not even close. Not even close. You win that battle.
So we got four guys on offense, four guys on defense. Some of these guys we've already talked about.
Yeah, good. Good.
Which is, we have the same brain.
Well,
now.
You're starting to see. Yeah, we're starting to see things the same way.
Infiltrated my brain.
I have. Damn it.
Only
in some things. There's other things I'm still trying to infiltrate.
Let's start on the offensive line here. Falcons right guard Chris Lindstrom. You already mentioned him. He had an awesome year, and I mean, an Atlanta Falcons team that really had a hard time, you know, throwing the ball.
Right. You
one
knew
dimensional.
They were going to run it, and they were like,
still did it.
Right.
Algier had over 1,000 yards, and he was a big part of this.
That's what I'm talking about, right? It's like, that to me has such great value. Oh, I mean, it's just like, we know you're going to run it right here, and we got 9 guys right here, and damn, you moved 2 of them out of the way. And that to me puts you on another level than, you know, maybe just the guy who's just getting it done or getting a good grade all the time.
He did end the year with a good grade, though. He was PFF's
I'm sure.
highest offensive lineman graded.
Yeah. I'm not shocked. Ever?
Ever. That's why, wow. like a 95, right?
Hey,
I don't think I'm overstating that. I think PFF gave him the highest grade ever.
He's baller. Best guard in the game for me right now.
Which I do think. And like you made all the good points on why some things may be overlooked or misgraded. I think you do take a whole season-long sample. Some of those get worked out. You know, any individual game you look at a grade, you're like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But through a season-long sample, usually
equals out. You're right.
Usually can equal out.
It does.
Also on the offensive line, my right tackle, under-talked about, Penei Sewell.
Oh,
my guy.
Shocker. Detroit Lions.
And I know, it's like we've talked about him, and he's a generational talent coming out of the draft, but he was a late add to the Pro Bowl, did not make it to start. And he's just a 22-year-old guy who Frank Ragnow says he is a tackle we create game plans for. He is a weapon. So I think a lot of the talk coming out of the draft was, who are you going to take, him or Jamar Chase? And we all know Jamar Chase. He is a superstar in the league. I'm making the case that maybe Penei Sewell is almost in that same category.
Yeah, he's a superstar. And he ain't going anywhere. And don't be shocked if you see him on the All-Pro team next year. I mean, he's definitely projecting that way. You know, and you know, again, you just see not only the size, you saw the athletic ability with him motioning and all of that. I mean, yeah, we're talking about a guy that's the staple for the right side of your line for a long time.
A staple on the under-talked-about team for Ahmed Fareed, quarterback.
Kirk Cousins.
So not that he's not talked about, because I think a lot of times he is talked about in a negative way. But I will always stick up for Kirk Cousins, because I think a lot of the problems get pinned on Kirk Cousins for the Vikings.
I would agree.
He is not usually the problem. Fourth most passing yards of any quarterback in the NFL this year. Fifth most touchdowns. He had the third most first downs, so moving the chains with that offense. I mean, they've had a good offense for a long time. He had the most pressures and took the most quarterback hits of any quarterback in the NFL. And if you want to talk about quarterback wins, which it seems like people do want to talk about that a lot, he was tied for third with Josh Allen this year. So I think Kirk Cousins doesn't get the love that he deserves.
He does not. He does not. Because he's not like a superstar, doesn't have an elite trait, but he can play the position. And, yeah, some of the things he does get overlooked by, you know, the public on a every week, you know, basis, or my Mike Florio, you know, showmate on PFT. But, you know, to add to what you're saying, they weren't a great running team this year. And, yeah, their interior O-line can't protect. They have two good tackles who are great on the edge, but he always has people in his face. And what I would add even more to yours, it ain't dink and dunk when we watch him play. They're aggressive. They throw the ball down the field. So, yeah, he's not going to be Mahomes or Allen and get on my back. I'm going to scramble around and make all these crazy plays and throws. But if you just give him a little chance, he'll take advantage of it. And I'm with you. That's good for you to put him on the list.
And I do think he should get some of the credit for the development of Justin Jefferson, too.
Sure.
Comes in as a rookie and tears it up, and now he's one of the best in the league. I mean, Justin Jefferson has a lot to do with that, too.
Yeah, but no.
Kirk Cousins is a part of that.
I don't disagree.
And my final player on the offensive side for the under-talked-about team, running back, Aaron Jones.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about him in the past, but I don't know if we talked about him enough this year. He had 5.3 yards per attempt. That was the highest for a running back with over 150 carries this year. That was more than Josh Jacobs, Nick Chubb, Travis Etienne, Tony Pollard, who gets a lot of love now.
Right.
Finally. Hey, I almost put Tony Pollard on the list, but I was like, I think he's finally getting the love now.
Yeah, he finally got it. Yep.
He had a career high, did Aaron Jones, in rushing yards. He had a career high in receptions this year. For an offense that struggled to throw the ball, Aaron Jones, in a lot of ways, carried them.
Capitalized. Was the biggest playmaker on their football team this year. You know, some ways prove me wrong for sure, as far as like, you know, just has a more of a physicality and kamikaze style of play than maybe I gave him credit for. Not a real big guy, but man, he brings it. And yeah, screens or give him a seam on the edge of the offense, he's a home run hitter. That's where he's special. And yeah, he made the most of it. I mean, because like you said, he shared some carries with what's his name? Big guy from Boston College this year.
Adrian Dillon.
Yeah, exactly right. So, he was impressive. That was a big-time year. And they just restructured his contract, right? I think they lowered his cap number a little bit just to keep him around, which they need him. You know, like we said, he's one of the few guys there, him and Watson, that I look at right now that I say he can do more than what the playbook says, right? He's capable of making some individual things happen to help the team out.
So the Packers are like, we're keeping the most important Aaron around here. We're going to keep Aaron Jones, lock him up for many years to come. Over on the defensive side, two names you already mentioned here. The Jaguars linebacker, Foye Oluokun.
Yep.
Who I think maybe doesn't get the love because people don't know how to say his last name.
Well, and he was in Atlanta, and he's in Jacksonville, and he went to Yale. Like, if he went to Alabama and he was on another team, we'd all be going, fucking this Oluokun's the best linebacker in football. But because he doesn't have that hype behind him, people don't know about it yet.
Yeah, 27-year-old, former sixth-round pick by Atlanta out of Yale, as you mentioned. Second year in a row that he's led the NFL in combined tackles. Also led in solo tackles this year. He is just always around the ball and
always
delivering some huge blows, too. He's a hard hitter.
No doubt.
Another Jaguar also here, Tyson Campbell.
Look at you.
Sims' favorite.
See, though?
Can you believe, I mean, like, I'm looking at that. I paused because I was thinking, you know, we talked so much about the Jacksonville Jaguars and Doug Peterson and Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence. This is his coming out party. And it's like, well, maybe we're starting to see that the defense had something to do with that, too.
Definitely. I mean, that secondary has got some ballers. They do. I think when you talk about Andre Sisko I just blanked on his Rashawn Jenkins, right? You know, so you'll look at that and you go, oh, wow, there's some young talent there that can be dangerous. And I'm looking at this right now. I must have missed this, but fifth best cornerback in the NFL, according to a vote by the players.
Yeah.
I did not see that.
Yeah,
I've been
that.
Paying attention to those a little bit and seeing when they come out. I missed that. But, okay, that says something, you know. Okay, PFF, I'm shocked he was top 10 there. I thought he'd be less than that just because, like I said, it's putting some really – tough man-to-man situations, but man, I'm a huge fan of what he is. He's an island corner, and you know me, I put those guys in a higher regard.
The problem is, though, if the players are talking about him, if you're talking about him, he's going to be over-talked about here pretty soon. He won't be able to make this
team,
which would be a problem for him. defensive end, edge. We're going Commanders. Montez Sweat. He was ninth this year, according to PFF. Tied for fourth in the NFL at that position in quarterback hits, and was one of the, you know, they have that pass rush win rate. How often do you get around your guy? And maybe you don't get to the quarterback, but you win that battle with the offensive lineman. He was one of the top ones in the NFL this year.
Like, it's a brilliant pick by you here.
Yes.
This is one of the most undervalued, under-the-radar defensive players in football. Gets a little overshadowed because of some of the big names on his defensive side. There's a second pick of the draft in Chase Young. But I think we've been consistent in the last 2 years. You know, even before Chase Young got hurt, I know I was on here and on PFT going, Montez Sweat is the best pass rusher on the Washington football team. And he is going to be interesting, right? Deron Payne's a free agent. Mm. He, I believe, is coming up. I think he might be a free agent. You know, and then you got to have Chase Young on the radar. I think Montez Sweat could be the number one reason Chase Young doesn't get an early second contract or whatever. They got some juggling to do there. I certainly would not let Montez Sweat out the door very easy.
Yeah.
He's good in everything. He's good against the run. And, yeah, those measurables and how long and explosive he is, I have a hard time thinking he won't last the test of time here and hang around a little, you know, for a good amount of time more in his football career.
Yeah, you mentioned Deron Payne is a free agent.
Yeah.
Probably going to get franchise tagged there. So, yeah, some decisions to make for
the
Commanders. Now they got the pressure of having a under-talked about guy here, too. Like, don't talk him up. He'll want
raise
more money.
Raise the price.
He'll want more money.
Cha-ching.
One more guy. We go defensive tackle here. We're going to give some love to the Panthers defensive tackle, Derek Brown, who had a couple of disappointing years. And I think sometimes what happens there is that if you're like, oh, he's a bust. He wasn't what we thought he would be. And then you stop paying attention to him. And I think this year he had a really good year. And
amazing year.
Pro Football Focus had him as the most improved player for the Carolina Packers this year. He was actually their third highest run defensive grade behind Sexy Dexy and Chris Jones, had a career high in stops. And so maybe he's finally realizing that potential that a lot of people saw in him.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't bad the first 2 years. It just wasn't good. It wasn't top 10 of the pick, you know, draft type of good. He became a force of nature this year and a one-man wrecking crew. And definitely when you turn on Carolina Panthers film, he popped every week. And I think it's kind of funny, and you know, I know we talked about it during the year, just the amount of good D tackles and good D linemen in the game right now. But I think there's a real correlation to Like, you look at the top defenses in football, the D-tackle thing is almost right where you look at a lot of the time. They go, well, yeah, okay, those guys are there. That's tough. And, yeah, he's amazing, and he's a building block there in Carolina for the future.
Ahead of the curve with the Big Butt Awards that we will get to after we give out our Peter Awards. Are these the same? So, Pete, is this what you gave to Chris for his All-Pro team here, too? So these are the similar names here.
Yep.
So Chris and Pete are in unison.
In unison.
In giving these Peter of the Year Awards. Punter, that goes to the Chiefs. Tommy Townsend, most underrated weapon on the champ, says Pete. Best net average, second longest hang time in the NFL this season.
Right. And it was, if I can remember right, it was him and the guy from the Tennessee Titans, right? Yeah.
And the Titans guy was often, nothing against him, but seemed to be out kicking his coverage, right? Didn't have the hang time of Townsend.
No doubt. Those are the little nuances that I leaned on Pete, and there's value to them. So when Pete started to like kind of explain some of those stats to me, I was like, oh, yeah, well, then, yeah, I want Tommy Townsend. That's the guy you want there.
Did he get first team then?
I believe he did.
Okay.
I believe he got off. He did get, but
mission
yes.
accomplished for
yeah.
you guys.
Well, I mean, hey, net average, of course, is always important. But, yeah, hang time is probably about as important as it gets. I mean, just ask the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. A low-hanging punt won them the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's when it becomes dangerous in the NFL. And you usually see with those type of punters, the Chiefs, I'm just thinking off the top of my head right now, I don't remember anybody returning a punt against them this year. And that's because that group was down there already ready to tackle by the time the guys are catching the ball.
The next three, are these all Flyers, Pete? Not all Flyers, but they're all involved in special teams. So the next one here, this is a Flyer. The Jets corner, Justin Hardy.
Flyer.
Tied for third in special teams tackles this season. Did it while getting the crap knocked out of him every single play as a Flyer. Pete goes, the most underrated job in the NFL.
It is. I mean, you see, like a guy like Matthew Slater, how valuable he's been to the Patriots for such a long time. There's a little bit more nuance to the position and doing it than I think people realize. There's some coaching and you know, hey, we want you to get down there and force the guy to go this way, you know, so the rest of the guys can make the tackle. And if you can make the tackle in doing that, please do. But yeah, I mean, Hardy became a marked man. I feel like he kind of made a name for himself, you know, about halfway through the year, and then you become, oh, wait, they're doing double team every time you punt the football. And then that's where it's another skill set. To be able to also have the combination of strength and speed to fight through the double teams all the time and still make tackles, yeah, that's special. It was a hell of a year. Some of the crazy Jet fans in our viewing rooms on Sunday were the ones that certainly pointed me out to Justin Hardy on a lot of weekly basis.
And I love the players like him are getting some love because I was around Virginia Tech football for a few years, and they had Beamer ball.
Right.
Which was one of the coolest things in college football. It was like Frank Beamer, he loved special teams, and you thought once every other game they were going to have a huge play on special teams that would change the game.
Definitely.
And when those plays happen, as you just mentioned, in the Super Bowl, they're huge. I mean, they're game-altering plays. You can almost affect a game on special teams even more than you can on offense and defense sometimes.
We overlook it a lot when we talk about the breakdowns of football games.
Another stud on special teams, Commander safety Jeremy Reeves, fifth-year veteran who hustles his ASS off, Pete puts in here. He was first-team All-Pro, deserved it. I think we all saw out there the emotional
That was awesome when Ron
exchange.
Rivera told him that he
yeah,
won.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was very cool. I mean, tackles, spotting the ball, diving in the end zone, saving balls. You know, he was a guy that Pete, again, put on my radar, you know, pretty early on in the football season. And when we got towards the end of the year, I kind of got sick of hearing talking about him all the time.
Like, I got it.
But
a message received.
Just, you know, guys like this have great value to a football team. Yeah, backup secondary football player can do some things there. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is his main gig right here. And he helped out the Commanders in this department.
One more. It is a long snapper.
Oh, baby.
The Vikings' Andrew DePaola? DePaola? DePaola. Sorry, we should have practiced that before. What an honor we've butchered your name. Andrew, congratulations. He was also first-team All-Pro. Good snapper, but Pete notes, shines because he books it downfield and makes tackles.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what separates this position right there. It's just that, like, yeah, well, all these guys snap the ball. it's not that big of a difference between the best snapper and the worst snapper.
Yeah.
It's about, yeah, who can get down there, who has the speed to get out of that position, get down the field, and then be somewhat of a threat to make the tackles, right? Di Paola, I think I got that right.
Yeah.
He's good, and I can't even remember. There was another snapper we had in the running, Pete. I can't remember off the top of my head, but all in all, you know, he was deserving of it and got not only the Peter Awards, but the first team All-Pro Award.
And Pete wants to make all of his children long snappers. That's his goal.
That's his goal. Hey, there's a career to be had there. There's no doubt. And they protect you now. They can't line up over you and, like, break your neck anymore. Yeah. A lot of positives there. You can play forever, right? I had a kid in college I played with. He never really played on the team. He was, like, our fourth tight end. And he went to the Minnesota Vikings and was a snapper there for 10, 12 years. Outlasted all these freaks of nature we had at Texas. He played longer than everybody.
And no one would give him the time of day, probably, in the locker room when he was in college.
He was a good dude. He was a good dude.
All right, we're going to get to the third annual Homies Choice Awards in 1 second. But first, the final Big Butt of the Year Awards.
Woo!
It is
we
that
like
time.
Big butts and we cannot lie.
The Big Butt of the Week.
Oh.
Time to give some love to these big guys.
Some touches.
There's a couple sacks, forced fumble. He's a butting superstar.
Woo.
Give it to him, Ahmed. One butt cheek.
This is why you're the big butt expert of the world right now.
Woo. It's sad. We're not going to hear that song for a few months now.
I know.
It's kind of the end of an era.
You could. You know what? Maybe that should be your job for the weekend.
What's that?
Who's got the best big butt of the combine?
Oh, you're right.
You know, give me the look. Give me, you know.
Big butt of the combine.
Big butt of the combine. Who looked really good in their spandex? That's what you're going to.
We will hear that song again.
And if you can, film yourself watching for this reason while your wife is watching you. Going,
yeah.
Wait, what do you evaluate? Well, honey, look at his butt in his spandex.
Here you go. And she goes, I already saw. We'll have my kids film that.
Yeah.
Good idea. All right, so second team, defensive tackle, big butt of the year. We're going to give that to Dexter Lawrence of the Giants.
Yep.
He won the weekly award two times, one time in the regular season, one time in the playoffs, as you mentioned, too. Made Kirk Cousins throw short and get ridiculed.
Yeah.
And so he is my second team
literally
guy.
The biggest butt maybe in football, and figuratively one of the best big butt of the year award players we got.
Second team edge might be kind of a shock.
I am a little surprised here.
I gave it to Jalen Phillips of the Miami Dolphins. He was the only two-time winner of the weekly award at edge on the season. I guess I spread it around quite a bit.
I didn't realize that.
Won it once in the regular season, once in the playoffs. He had the most pressures by a Dolphin in over a decade. And he was third amongst edge in tackles, so effective in the run game as well. So some love to Jalen Phillips out there.
Hey, you know, there's a reason. We were talking about him a lot coming out in the draft 2 years ago, and we were trying to tell people he was the best pass rusher in that draft.
Yeah.
He's a superstar, Ahmed. He is a superstar, and he is on the trajectory of I'm going to be one of the five best pass rushers in football and make somewhere close to $30 million a year here in the next few years.
Think of that team with Chubb and Jalen Phillips.
Oh, my God.
Christian Wilkins. The secondary they have.
They're going to have, you know, first world problems is figuring out how to keep all those talented young players they got.
Team on the rise.
Yeah.
And now it is time for the Big Butt of the Year Award winner at defensive tackle. Ladies and gentlemen, congratulations. You just won a Super Bowl, but now you have won the biggest award of your life. Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs, a five-time winner of the weekly award, including in the divisional round, the AFC Championship, and the Super Bowl, the three that you want to win it in. Chris Jones, congratulations. You are the big butt at defensive tackle.
Oh, way to go. We gave him a lot of praise all year long.
All year long.
It was the first year in, you know, 7 years or so that there was somebody not named Aaron Donald that was known as the best defensive tackle in football. And it was this guy right here. He's been probably second in football for like the last 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 really. But this year he was clearly the guy, and we saw a number of marquee moments throughout the year and in the playoffs, of course, in big moments. He's a star. He's a difference maker, and yeah, be interesting, you know. I got to look at him. He's a type of guy with what he got paid a few years ago and the way he's playing. They're going to have to worry about his contract probably in the next year or so, too.
One thing we know, he does have an elephant butt award trophy now in his trophy case. For Edge, so I gave it to Jalen Phillips, second team. So you're like, who is he going to give it to for first team?
What a cheater.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Big Butt Award winner of the year at Edge is... a tie. Nick Bosa from the 49ers and Micah Parsons from the Dallas Cowboys. Pete's booing in our ear. You know, it's my award. I can do whatever
you
I want to
do.
It was impossible to separate the two, and so I didn't do it.
Yeah,
I just
great.
Gave it to both
you
of them.
It's racial harmony, too. You got one white butt, one black butt.
Exactly.
We can merge them together and make one there. That's great.
Nick Bosa led in quarterback hits by a pretty good margin this year, and then Micah Parsons led in pressures and hurries by a lot. So, I mean, they both had awesome years. They both deserve an elephant rear trophy.
Yeah, I mean, with T.J. Watt being hurt this year, Joey Bosa, you know, being hurt, I just think these two were clearly the best. Like, Bosa's the best defensive edge player in the game. I think, you know,
like
pass
one
rusher,
game, who do you
run
want?
Game. Right, I'm taking him.
Yeah.
Micah's the greatest front seven athlete in the game right now, and... like he's not as great of a pass rusher as Nick Bosa as far as all the things he can offer to an offensive tackle and his skill set, but his explosive ability is so off the charts that you're just like, he only needs two moves. It's all he needs because it's so fucking unreal how quick he can get off the ball, turn the corner, handle a little weight on his frame, even though he's 248 pounds or whatever. They're both amazing, but just amazing in a little bit of a different way. So, okay, I'm cool with you splitting their butt up there.
Had to do it. They each get one cheek.
Yeah.
We'll split the trophy in half. One cheek to Nick Bosa, the other to Micah Parsons.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand. Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
All right, so now we finish with the third annual Homies Choice Award. So you tweeted out a ballot out here. We got 361 responses. Well done, Homies.
It's a little
out
weak, a little weak for our group.
You wanted more?
We've had these type of votes that go into the thousands before, but you know, I think everybody already hit the off-season Super Bowl mode last week, and they didn't get involved.
So a reminder that unlike the NFL awards, these awards do include playoff performance.
Yeah.
Not just the regular season.
Right.
So that could totally change who wins the MVP here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes, congratulations. You are the Homies Choice Award winner. 83% of the vote to him. Second place, your guy Jalen Hurts with 6% of the votes.
Yeah, I understand that. I certainly do. You know, wouldn't have been mine, but I got no problem with this list here. I think those are the guys that you would look at. I know we had a few others receiving votes as well.
Yeah, some write-in candidates.
Yeah.
The Eagles O-line got a vote.
Yeah.
Mike Florio got a vote.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, come on. We're better than that. Don't vote for him, homies. Come on. What are you doing?
Yeah. I wonder if he has a vote. If he has a vote in every one of these categories, we know that just Mike got a hold of it.
It might have been Mike.
Voting
right.
for himself there. Patrick Mahomes, congratulations, homie of the year, MVP award winner. Offensive player of the year, according to the homies, this one goes to... Justin Jefferson, 48% of the vote. Patrick Mahomes, second, 21%. Yeah, Jalen Hurts, third. I went with Travis Kelce here, who got 9% of the votes.
Yeah.
I think you could make the case. You know, you never want to give it to the MVP guy again, which I feel like we should sort these awards out a little bit.
Right.
Because if you're the MVP of the league, I mean, you're also the offensive player of the league, too, but people don't like to give it to the same guy twice, which I get. You should almost make the MVP like ineligible to receive the award.
MVP, I agree.
We do that next
agree
year.
Agree with that.
Whoever you voted for MVP, you can't vote for offensive player. But yeah, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
The top choice for the homies.
I don't have any problem with that. I think what I'm more shocked at is that one, Tyreek Hill didn't get more votes.
Yeah.
And that the homies, there's no A.J. Brown on here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's where I'd go, like, what? Like, I think A.J. Brown did more with the ball than anybody in the sport. I think he caught more balls that were improbable to catch than anybody in the sport. Maybe Justin Jefferson did. I think he caught more 50-50 balls. I mean, he has some numbers where, you know, to me, him and Tyreek Hill, nobody changed their teams more. I'm not saying their year was better than Justin Jefferson. But I'm just so shocked that they weren't
higher up. Two guys
that changed their teams more than those two direct correlation. Again, I mean, 88 receptions for 1496, 17 yards per reception, and he has another number one on the other side of the field, and they had the best running game in football. Like, if they don't have the best running game in football and maybe just a good number two, what the fuck are his stats going to be? Like, that's where I just go, I think the homies are missing out on his value and Tyreek Hill's value to the Dolphins just a little.
Lane Johnson got one vote. That would be great one of these years, right? Wouldn't that be awesome if an offensive lineman won offensive player of the year?
It would be. It really would.
Not going to happen in our lifetime, but maybe our kids could
like to
see
it. If there could be like a left tackle or a right tackle who plays in some crazy division where there's like great pass rushers and has a crazy
pass rusher, and
he gives up no sacks all year, maybe it'd be that type of thing.
Yeah, shut down a guy like Nick Bosa, who is the defensive player of the year, according to the homies. So they had to make a choice. They chose Nick Bosa, 42% of the vote. Chris Jones, second, 29%. Then you got Micah Parsons at 13%, and then Hassan Reddick at 12%. That probably checks out.
Yeah, that's hard to disagree, disregard that group right there. That's pretty strong, and I think, you know, we're in agreement that, you know, the top three guys to me were clearly, you know, the top three guys. That's for sure. Bosa, Jones, and Parsons were a little bit of a class of their own for my money.
Also receiving votes, you got Patrick Surtain in there, you got Max Crosby, Quinnen Williams, and you also had one for the king of the big butts, Ahmed Farid.
Wow,
I got one.
Wow. Well, that's okay. Yep, he is the king of the big butts. He doesn't have a big butt himself, but he is the king of it.
Maybe one day I'll grow into it. Defensive or offensive rookie of the year. This one was tough for me.
Mm.
Going through these, I was like, who am I? Because I do like Kenneth Walker, and he is the winner, according to the homies. And this is different than the AP award, which went to Garrett Wilson, who got the second most votes by the homies. So it was 30% for Kenneth Walker, 27% for Garrett Wilson, Brock Purdy third at 25%. And you got Chris Olave, Isaiah Pacheco, and Tyler Allgeier. Yeah, there were some good ones.
A
good year for some skilled players on the offensive side, rookies.
We had some rookies. I mean, Kenny Pickett, what a year he had. Damian Pierce, right, the running back for the Texans. I see Tyler Smith, the tackle for the Cowboys. Christian Watson, George Pickens, they all received votes. I mean, there was some studs in this rookie class. Brock Purdy won my offensive player of the year. And I put Kenneth Walker second, I think, with Garrett Wilson third, honestly. You know, one, Purdy, what he did at quarterback, I know the team was good. He's still a quarterback who was expecting to be a third stringer. And to come in and do that and then really kind of, I don't know, make the offense look as good as it's looked in 3 years. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And then Kenneth Walker, I don't think when you saw him get healthy in week three or whatever, I don't think there was any wasn't a shock to me or their success of their offense exploded because of him. And I think, you know, as we've talked about during the year, physically his skill set is as good as the top running backs in football. I mean, he's superstar all over him.
I think I went with Chris Olave, if I remember correctly. He got 9% of the homies' votes here. Just because I thought, you know, Garrett Wilson won it, but I don't think they had two different of years.
No,
really.
Garrett Wilson
and Chris Olave.
No, you're right. Wilson, I think, had the New York media behind him.
Yeah.
He himself is a little bit more boisterous and talks to the media a little bit more. And I think that added to
you know, his overall flair as a person gave him a little bit of notoriety in that department.
Maybe it helped Sauce Gardner, too, because he won the Defensive Rookie of the Year, according to our homies, and this vote was not even close. 74% for him. Aiden Hutchinson, I did vote for my guy Aiden. I'm a good Detroit Lions fan. 16% of the vote, and then Tariq Woolen with 7% of the vote.
Yeah, Sauce, to me, this should be closer. Sauce, to me, is a little... he's not overrated. He's being overrated a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't think Aiden Hutchinson is getting enough credit for what he did would be my first thing. Tariq Woolen, it's awesome to see him get love because, I mean, again, for that guy and what he did at the Combine to be the first thing he jumped on the scene and then capitalized that was amazing. But, you know, Hutchinson is a fuck-the-play-up guy. And... he is disruptive that way to where he shoots through gaps and wins with quickness like we talked about in the draft process where he gets through there. He might not make the tackle, but he ruined the play, right? Let alone the interceptions, some of that. He can do everything. Sauce, awesome, but a little bit does benefit from the things I talked about at corner earlier. It's a lot of cover three. It's a great pass rush. Again, I want to make this clear. He's awesome. I'm just saying sometimes that gets a little pushed higher than it should, and I think that's maybe a case.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Life is a little easier for him than some other corners
out there.
I'm
saying, yes. He's not getting put in some of the positions that some of the other ones are getting put in.
Not that he couldn't handle it.
He's showed me he can. It's just not, he doesn't do it as much as they do. And then, of course, as we talked about all year, that Jets pass rush is ferocious.
Some other guys who got some votes out there, George Karlaftis, Jalen Watson, Jaquan Brisker, Trent McDuffie, and your guy, Kayvon Thibodeau. Take that, Chris Sims.
Yes. Take that.
Coach of the Year. This one went to Brian Daboll, and the homies agree, but this was very close in voting. It was Brian Daboll, 28% of the homies' votes, and then the guy I voted for, Kyle Shanahan, second, 26% of the votes.
Yeah, I voted for him too.
Kyle?
I went Shanahan. I did. I went Shanahan. I had Daboll 2, Doug Peterson 3. I mean, it was so hard, really, even with Daboll and Doug Peterson there. And I'm not – Daboll certainly deserving. I guess, you know, again, Shanahan, I just look at, like, what we talked about a little bit with Brock Purdy. It's a third stringer. And, no, not only did they, like, oh, we don't have to manage the offense exploded. And then not only are, like, oh, wow, we're just finding ways to win games with our third stringer. No, they were fucking dominating teams like we talked about. That's where, you know, I'm amazed by it. And I don't know, I guess there's a part of me, too, that thinks Shanahan should have won it in 2019 when John Harbaugh, the Ravens won it over him. So, yeah, I gave Shanahan the vote. I know I'm probably a little biased in that department, but certainly not mad to see Daboll win it.
And here's an indication that the homies were taking the playoffs into account, too. Andy Reid.
Yeah.
15%. He was the third highest vote getter. Can't argue with that. He won the whole thing. That was the goal.
Right. The way they responded after Mahomes got hurt against Jacksonville.
I mean, totally.
The way the chippiness they played with against the Bengals and then an all-time game plan to beat a team that's better than you in the Super Bowl? Yes, he should have been bumped up after that playoffs.
I mean, you can make an argument for Andy Reid being up there amongst the top coaches that have ever coached.
He's definitely in that conversation. Definitely. With that last win, he was already, like, you know, Hall of Fame coach, right? Now, to me, he went into the upper echelon Hall of Fame coach. He's now, we're talking about the Tom Landrys of the world and, you know, the Bill Walshes and the Chuck Knowles and all those. I mean, he's in that. And I'm not saying he's above them, but, like, greatest coaches in the history of the league, two different teams, right?
That's a thing for me.
Multiple, I mean, yeah, Super Bowl appearance with both teams, multiple with one team, in the midst of a dynasty that's still going, yeah.
Yeah.
He's up there.
The thing for me is that he's done it in different situations, right? He's been very, very good Super Bowl team with Donovan McNabb.
Right.
They were very, very good with the Chiefs and Alex Smith.
Yeah.
And now they're very, very good with Patrick Mahomes. And so it's like that. Not every coach has had their peaks with that many different quarterbacks and styles.
No, it's almost like, you know, his Eagles career probably wasn't a Hall of Fame career, but it was close. It's, you know, I was going to say, like, how, you know, you can say Tom Brady had two Hall of Fame careers.
Yeah.
I mean, if Andy Reid just won a Super Bowl with the Eagles, you'd go, he had two Hall of Fame careers with two different football teams, you know. He doesn't get that probably because in Philadelphia he lost a Super Bowl and then, what, lost four other NFC championship games to get to the Super Bowl. That hurt that, but he's making up for it now.
So some others receiving votes, Jeff Saturday, and then they go, LOL, just kidding, Brian Daboll. So I don't know if we counted that one or not. And then Pete Demolemolitis got a vote.
Damn, look
as
at
well.
Pete. Look at Pete voting for himself.
Good homies out there making us feel good. Yeah. Yeah, they got close to spelling the name correctly. Breakout player of the year. So this is what Pete has done here, because we've complained about this. It's like comeback player of the year and breakout player of the year. They're really two different things, right? Comeback player of the year, it's like if you weren't hurt last year, you just sat the bench. Did you really come back? You were there.
Right.
You just didn't play. So we've separated it. Breakout player of the year, and the homies have chosen Geno Smith for this one. The haters were writing. He didn't write back. 41%. 41% of the votes out there go to Geno. Second was Dexter Lawrence at 17%. Hufanga, 14% for the 49ers. Then Josh Jacobs, 13%. I would have thought he might get a little more love. Josh Jacobs seems like he was left for dead. But you really can't argue with Geno Smith, the homie's pick.
No, it's hard. I actually like what the guys did. The top two picks there. You know, for Dexter to break out the way he did and jump into the best defensive tackle combo. But, yeah, Geno in that year, it was a special year. And good for Geno. And he was my comeback player of the year with my AP voting. If they broke it down this way, yeah, I would have made him breakout player. And then I probably would have made comeback player of the year Saquon Barkley over McCaffrey. McCaffrey was awesome. Don't get me wrong, right? You know, but, like, do I think that Saquon Barkley could have done what McCaffrey did if he was on the 49ers football team? Of course I do.
So this is what the homies voted. This was the closest vote by the homies, too, for the comeback player of the year. And it was Christian McCaffrey just by one percentage point, 43% of the vote over Saquon Barkley, who got 42% of the vote.
What about you there? You got to say, like, where you would have leaned on that one?
Who did I vote for there? I think I voted for Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, you think so?
Saquon Barkley there. Yeah. For the reasons you mentioned, right? It was like, I don't think Christian McCaffrey, I mean, it's so close, right? Who knows?
Yeah, he was awesome.
I do want to say, though, that for the breakout player of the year, we had our most write-ins for a player in that category. Tony Pollard got 15 write-ins for the breakout player of the year. And that's a good check by the homies out there.
Definitely. You know, you said it earlier in the pod. I think everybody saw. You and I were laughing at the midway point of the year when we were watching, like, some people on TV were trying to go, the key to their offense is Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, remember he missed a game and people were like, they didn't have Zeke. And I want to be like, they didn't have the water boy either. Who the fuck cares? What are you talking about? Like, what? They didn't have a 2-yard run up the middle? Like, what was everybody watching? What's everybody talking about? Damn, it sucks that Pollard got hurt like that.
Well,
I mean, it really does.
It goes in the beginning of the year, they got to lean on Zeke, and then at the end of the year, it's like, oh, they would have won if they had Tony Pollard.
Yeah,
if he hadn't gotten hurt, which maybe they would have. All right, our final one for the homies here. The damn okay performance of the year. We gave you a lot of plays out there, and ultimately, I would say a bit of a landslide here with all the different plays, a quarter of the votes.
Yeah.
Go to Justin Jefferson, his Week 10 performance at Buffalo. That really does stand out. 193 receiving yards, one receiving touchdown. That got 24% of the vote. Beating out Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl was 16% of the vote.
Oh, it's like, hey, I'm Justin Jefferson. That game, that's still one of the most amazing games of the year.
Great
catch, and that, those
great
plays
moment.
There. Where I just, you know, there was three or four plays in the late third, fourth quarter where it was just like, just throw it up. He'll catch it. And that's where it got to. And, yeah, that was a huge game. They were down, 27-10 maybe, I think, in Buffalo, something like that. So I'm with you there. Now, I couldn't disagree with the homies more about that second performance. I couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't disagree more. And you know that. And I'm not going to hold back again. There's no way that was the second best performance of the year. Sorry.
NBC says that we have
the two 1-inch rushing touchdowns, the monumental fumble in the second quarter, the advantage of the game that was not taken advantage of. Listen, we know the Eagles' D was good. We knew Mahomes was good. We knew there was going to be a chance that the Chiefs' offense would be able to move the ball against the Eagles' defense. We knew that. What we didn't know was, could the Chiefs ever stop the Eagles? That was the question anybody had in the game. It's why all the Fox analysts picked the Eagles to win by 10 points before the game, right? A fumble, a three and out, and two field goal drives. The best offense in football couldn't do that against a non-top 10 defense. There's no way that was one of the best performances of the year, homies. Come on.
Pete, we needed a trigger warning. We needed a trigger warning right there. But you should be glad that the homies put Patrick Mahomes 182 yards in the Super Bowl as third.
Yeah.
Just 3 percentage points behind that.
I don't know if I agree with that either as far as the damn okay performance of the year.
I voted for the one that's number four here. I voted for Tua's 469 passing yards and six touchdowns.
That was a moment.
Now, of course, that Baltimore messed some things up there.
Yeah.
But the dude threw for almost 500 yards and six touchdowns.
Yeah, no, that was a moment, certainly. That was the moment the Tua coming out party were like, oh, crap, the Dolphins might have something here. Damn, they're kind of dangerous, and holy crap, they're fun to watch, too. I think that was up there. It certainly was. I feel like I'm missing one that I thought of the other day, and I can't think about it right now. But either way, that's good enough. Yeah.
Others receiving votes were Dak in the wild card, Kirk Cousins against the Colts, that comeback game.
Yeah, that was pretty freaking amazing.
Daniel Jones, Dexter Lawrence, wild card. Trevor Lawrence when he came back from four picks.
That was
pretty good.
That was amazing. That really was.
And also receiving votes, this happened at the Super Bowl during Super Bowl week. Chris Sims somehow not injuring himself when falling off the stage. Performance of the year.
Thank you.
Damn okay.
Thank you
that is it. I mean, most mortal people would have broken a bone, maybe sprained an ankle.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm
twisted
okay.
Twisted a wrist.
I'm okay. Not a problem. Look at all my concerned NBC working fellows. There's Florio looking. Oh, yeah, he fell. There's Matt Casey just laughing at me. You fell, you jerk.
Yeah, Mike laughed.
Gosh.
Matt Casey pointed.
Only the guy who made the stage came to help me because he was worried that I was going to get mad at him for making the stage not good
What was
enough.
Not seen there, though, is that after Mike just looked at you and laughed.
He drank his water?
He grabbed for a water.
Yeah, I know.
I was like, I'm thirsty.
Right.
And I was like, oh, is he getting that for Chris? He's like, no, he's parched. So well done, homies.
Way to go,
Thanks
homies.
For participating. We're not mad at you. We wish more of the homies maybe would have participated, but you know what?
Yeah,
361,
it's a weird time of the year.
That's fine.
Yeah. I was on vacation. I can't sit there and be mad at anybody for not participating. So I'm not mad at you.
You're getting red as a lobster.
I think it's a good way, and it's a good thing that we did this here, the Monday before the combine. It kind of puts a close to the 2022 season.
Yep.
We kind of discussed that. Now we move forward, and it's on to the next thing. We'll be all about free agency, the draft, all that coming to a theater near you on a weekly basis, twice a week. And you and I will be back on what, Thursday? Are we back on Thursday this week?
I don't even know.
I don't.
No, we're not.
We're going to release a second combine interviews is how we're going to do that this week. Okay, so I was a little off there. It'll be combine interviews, things that Mike and I do, not on the live show. We are doing a live show from 12 to 3 on Peacock, but we will be there much longer than that to do other interviews with other guys and coaches, prospects, coaches, all that type of stuff.
I like your coaches' interviews during the combine.
Man.
I remember
Thanks.
Nick Sirianni last year at
the
combine,
it was awesome,
right? That was a great interview.
Awesome, yeah. So it's always good to be out there, and hope everybody enjoyed this podcast. Ahmed, you the man. Thanks for leading the charge once again. No red pants, kind of disappointed after the break, but we'll forgive you because your tan is so damn handsome looking. And you're the Big Butt Award guy, so I got just so much respect for you. All right, everybody, be good. Stay in touch. You know where to find us. Rate, review, subscribe, and we'll see you live next week. Hey, pay attention to these combine interviews. We'll have fun, but it'll be a normal schedule coming next Monday. All right, peace out. Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's.
Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.